You are listening to the I Want to Speak to the Principal podcast with your host, Dr. Michael Milstead and William Jeffrey. It's where education is. So sit back, relax, and enjoy another episode of I Want to Speak to the Principal.
There are many prevailing myths that serve as cornerstones for those who advocate the advancement of school vouchers over the public school system. Ideas such as school vouchers offer students in failing schools access to a better education. School vouchers allow parents to choose their child's education. School vouchers improve education in general by making public schools compete with private schools for students in a free market. And the all-time classic, school vouchers allow school districts to overcome racial and other segregations. Proponents of these statements feel strongly that if repeated often enough, as myths are, then many who have any doubt in the effectiveness of the current U.S. public school system may be persuaded to concur while buying into these unfound statements. Myths, widely held but false beliefs or ideas, are prevalent in our American school system. Most are created to infuse a line of division between a good school and a bad one. They're often conjugated not necessarily based on what is actually occurring at the school, but more so on how society views those who are in the school. In this episode of I Want to Speak with the Principal, we will investigate age-old myths surrounding schools of poverty. In addition, we have an exclusive interview with Dr. Kimberly McLeod, Assistant Superintendent for the Harris County Department of Education, on the impact of the coronavirus on U.S. schools. So sit back, relax, and enjoy another episode of I Want to Speak to the Principal.
The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed during this or any broadcast belong solely to our guests or our hosts. These broadcasts do not represent or reflect the views of their employers, sponsors, or affiliated organizations.
Speak to Principal would like to welcome Dr. Frances Hester to our show. Dr. Hester, good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Dr. Hester, and thank you for joining us this morning.
Yeah, good morning, Dr. Hester. William Jeffrey, how are you?
Good morning, Mr. Jeffers. I am well and excited to have this opportunity to visit with you all this morning.
Well, thank you. We're excited to have you, Dr. Hester. Dr. Hester, would you start by just giving us some information about your background in education?
Awesome. Yes, I have had the wonderful privilege of serving in this ministry called education. It will be 30 years, December 2020 of this year. And I've had an array of experiences. I started off as a classroom teacher, then was privileged to become a school counselor. And after working as a school counselor, I had the opportunity to work in volunteers in public schools, which is communication. And so I did that for a little while, but realized that I truly love being on a campus setting. And so I went back to become an assistant principal. And as an assistant principal for 3 years serving in Child and Campus, I decided to go ahead and pursue the opportunity to become a principal. And so I served as a principal for 15 plus years and thoroughly enjoyed that. And then after a while, I was recruited to actually work with the Department of Education. Now I stand as the senior director of the Teaching and Learning Center, where we provide professional development for districts throughout the nation.
Wow, that is a wide array of experience, Dr. Hester.
Wow, that's amazing.
That is.
I was a benefit of going to some of your sessions at the Harris County Department of Education. So you guys do an amazing job out there.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. We try really, really, really hard to provide quality, relevant, research-based professional development. So thank you for that feedback.
And of course, I've known you for quite some time, Dr. Hester, way back in the day when you were just an up-and-coming school counselor. Man, you used to mention 30 years. I said, wow, I've been knowing over half that amount of time. So not trying to age myself, but and not trying to age you also, but we have been colleagues and friends for quite some time. Again, I welcome this opportunity to share with, have you share your thoughts with us on the topic that that's the kind of that is being prevalent throughout education, and that is myths surrounding schools of poverty. And we want to discuss that with you today. You know, one myth that is out there quite a bit and has been for quite some time is that students from schools of poverty really don't value education. What are your views on that, Dr. Hester?
So I just simply, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to share. I just simply shake my head. It is quite discouraging, but I've learned as an educator that you can't get discouraged with comments that are being made about certain campuses. I totally disagree with that. As you know, I've had the privilege of serving at multiple campuses, and all of those campuses were campuses that had students that came from poverty backgrounds. That is certainly not true. As you know, Dr. Mills said, being a principal, most times when we would drive up to the campus, our kids were there waiting on us.
Right.
And so they were waiting to get into the building because they wanted to learn. They wanted to be in a safe environment. They wanted to bring their best, and they did bring their best, but we had to meet them where they were or where they are and then take them to the next level. So that's certainly not true. I can tell you that that is probably the only campus that I would want to work at, because the students that are coming from those environments are very transparent, they're very open, and they're very, very willing. They just seek an opportunity, and they're seeking and looking for hope and someone to believe in them. So again, as you know, that our babies come to us ready to learn, and they're ready for the doors to open every single morning.
I certainly concur with you, Dr. Hester. That's awesome.
Dr. Hester, I have a question for you. Sometimes a myth that we hear about schools of poverty is that teachers in schools of poverty are not qualified to teach in other schools as they are in a school of poverty. It seems that some people have the notion that the teachers can't teach. Can you give some light on that situation?
Yes, sir. So I do have to control myself again when I hear statements like that, because that is certainly not true. I can tell you from experience that teachers that work on campuses that have students that are coming from poverty situations are even more qualified. And let me tell you why. Not only do they have the credentials, not only do they have the advanced degrees, but they have the heart and they have the emotional intelligence to understand where our students are coming from. So there were teachers on my campus that were always looking for opportunities because they want to be lifelong learners, and they are lifelong learners. So they understand that it does not stop just with a bachelor's, or it does not stop just with a master's or a doctorate, but they're constantly looking at opportunities to read articles and do book studies. And in addition to that, they look for professional development opportunities. Mr. Jeffers, you just mentioned it a few minutes ago, they're always looking for opportunities to learn and to grow and to bring that information back and use it in the classroom. And then they look for opportunities to go in and observe their colleagues. If their colleagues are doing a good job with a particular peak, or they're doing something spectacular and they see the kids are learning, they're transparent enough to say, you know what, I'm not getting that. Let me come and see what you are doing. So that is certainly not true. I can tell you there are some of the best professionals that are out there that's doing whatever it takes to help students be successful. So then it goes beyond just the classroom. They go out into the community and they go into the homes and work with the parents. So they really look at the whole child and what we can do to bring along that social emotional learning part and bridge it to the content. So they're always looking for opportunities to serve students and to be better educators. I hope I answered your question.
Oh yeah, that did a great job.
I think you did.
Yeah, we're looking at each other smiling over here, Dr. Hester. Dr. Hester, you know, also as principals, you and I have heard this quite a bit. You know, the curriculum in poverty schools is not challenging, and you have to water down the curriculum in order to get the kids to learn. Could you share your thoughts about this particular myth?
So I have no idea. I think people just want to make up things. You mentioned water down, when in essence, teachers at campuses where kids are coming and we're providing hope, we're focusing on watering up the curriculum.
There you go.
So there's no such thing as water down. We water up.
Right.
Because we set the expectations even higher than the state or the district will set the expectations. In fact, we focus on ways of teaching and helping students make sense of what is expected to learn. We understand it's important that students understand the subject matter and that we help them to relate the information to their own background, knowledge, and experience. So no, we don't water down. We water up.
There you go.
And we try to make it challenging and impactful, but at the same time, we want the learning to be fun, because teaching and learning should be fun. So no, we water up.
There you go. You know what? I like that term, watering up. Will, we're going to have to use that one.
Flood.
Yeah, there you go.
Flood.
Tsunami.
Watering up, flooding.
Tsunami the kids with the information. There you go. Well, Dr. Hester, that is going to conclude our time with you today. We want to thank you so much for sharing those powerful and passionate words of wisdom as it relates to countering some of the myths that surround schools of poverty. As always, your thoughts were impeccable, as you are. So thanks so much.
Thank you so much. You had me on fire again. Just talking about it.
Gets
me fired up.
The passion is in your voice, most definitely.
Oh, absolutely. It definitely comes out. Thank you very much, Dr. Hester, and have a great day.
Hey, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at I Want to Speak to the Principal. You can also leave us a message on Anchor, and all those voice notes can be played into our next episode. So please interact with us. We're looking forward to hearing from you.
Speak to Principal would like to welcome Dr. Marshall DePause to our show. Good morning, Dr. DePause.
Good morning. How are you?
I am doing good. Dr. DePause, thank you for joining us this morning. Before we get on our topic for today, we're going to have you just give us a little background about your experience in education.
Okay, well, I worked 30 years in the education system, exclusively at North Forest ISD. I worked as a science teacher for a number of years, AP for 9 years, and then the building principal at a middle school for 9 years, and then at a comprehensive high school for 5 years. Total of 30 years. And after retirement, I worked as a leadership coach, Youth A Plus Challenge, and currently in Houston ISD, and also work as a full-time clinical professor at Texas Southern University.
Wow. Marsh, I know you have a world of experience, and I am just very proud to say that I have been knowing you for quite some time, and you're an outstanding educator, professor, and a former school principal, and you've certainly had a big impact on my career.
Great.
So Dr. DePause, we want to start this morning. Our topic is investigating age-old myths surrounding schools of poverty. One myth that surrounds schools of poverty is that students don't value education. What's your view on this?
I think that's misleading. I think for the most part, too, our parents who send kids to school, they're sending you the best that they have, and they're not in a position to send you something different than what they have. So I think for the most part, kids are generally interested, but for the most part, teachers have to make the teaching and learning process interesting and pretty much reach them at their level and try to determine what learning styles are and teach to those learning styles. So I think the interest is just a matter of being creative in the classroom with our lessons and what have you.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. Mm-hmm. Also, under Dr. DePause, there's a myth that the school is not safe. So as a former principal, what's your take on that?
Well, as Dr. Mills said, I worked in a high-needs school district for 30 years. There were rare instances where safety was an issue. Maybe a weapon here now and then, and maybe a little drugs, but nothing that would significantly move the barometer in a negative aspect. So right. I felt completely safe my entire 30 years. A few incidents we could not control, but for the most part, I felt safe every single day. So that myth, it needs to be dispelled.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Dr. DePause, I didn't want to throw in a question at you real quick. There is also a myth that says that there's no parental involvement in schools of poverty. And I know that you said you worked in a high needs district. What's your experience?
First of all, coming in as a campus administrator, you have to take stock in the school, the community, and all the stakeholders. In other words, you have to put in some sweat equity to devote time to learning the dynamics of the community, understanding the school culture and shaping it from the standpoint where as a principal, you are accessible not only to the students, but you have a line of communication with parents via direct parents or surrogate parents. But I think for the most part, it requires a lot of time and effort. If if it's a principal coming in, let's just say for a year or so, then they leave, then they've invested no time. But and research shows it takes 3 to 5 years to have some kind of impact on teaching and learning. So if you invest the time and take the effort to network, to make yourself available to parents, to go to community activities, visit the church and what have you, then yes, you will get the involvement that you need. And not every parent is going to be available, but if the word gets out there that you are making yourself accessible, then parents have a tendency to navigate towards you for purposes of helping them with home issues, or just the mere fact of helping you to help them better educate their child.
I agree with you, Marsh. I think, you know, a key to that is really listening to your parents. And another thing that you mentioned earlier, just making your school welcoming to parents when they come in too. I think that goes a long ways into getting that parental involvement. You know, a lot of times what we'll do too in education, all areas, is that, you know, we'll judge a parent based on, you know, how they come into the school, how they look, the, you know, how they speak. Right. And their prior education also. I think, but if we make our schools non-judgment zones of parents, then I think our parents would be feel more appreciated when they come into the school.
Totally agree.
Right.
So, you know, just continuing on in our discussion of myth, there's also a myth that the school has incompetent leadership. What do you don't get too passionate about this, Marsh, but there's often a myth when it comes to poverty schools that the leadership is incompetent. What's your take on that?
In my experience, especially with high need schools that need a turnaround agent or a turnaround principal, oftentimes there is a recruitment effort to hire the best person available, or if you're a positive-minded school district, you pretty much train those individuals to sustain growth. So I think it would be misleading to put someone there that's incompetent, because in reality, you're defeating the purpose.
Right.
My experience, I guess on the negative side, new principals may have been brought in that did not necessarily have a strong, or let's say that the years invested. Right. But for the most part, when they come in, they work hard. But also on the opposite side, you have those individuals who are coming in to make a name for themselves. So after about a year or so, then they turn the campus around. Right. Then they may leave for something bigger and better. But for the most part, I can't fathom any school district hiring someone that's incompetent, especially in a high need school, because no growth, and you really, in reality, you're defeating the purpose.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, sometimes when you have schools of poverty, leadership in schools of poverty, they're the fall person that is for when school is not performing academically as it should. And sometimes I think school districts should look at maybe cutting back or alleviating, shifting the blame to the principal, because that's done quite often. And what it does also is that it discourages, I believe, it discourages a lot of young principals from pursuing higher capacities in leadership. You know,
I agree with you.
You know, when you and I both know, Dr. Paz, that, you know, when you're a principal at a high need school, not only are you the principal, you know, you're a mentor, you're a counselor, you're a dad, you know, you're a confidant and all those things in addition to being the instructional leader. So it can quite the toll on you sometimes.
Right. You find yourself wearing a lot of hats.
Yeah, I agree. So, Doc, thank you so much. Do you have any departing words that you'd like to leave us with before we conclude our interview with you?
Well, what I can say is that from the time we were in the school system, education was kind of like something you can grow into. Now, with the types of students and the clientele of parents, it's a big challenge.
Yeah.
And I think now more than ever, campus leaders, inclusive of staff, teachers, and what have you, and community partners, need to be proactive in doing their level best to educate the kids in that community. Because when you think about it, they are our future. And if we don't have a well-educated citizenry, then we are, in a sense, guiding ourselves in a path that's not going to be beneficial to us down the road.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Doc. Those are very insightful and powerful and passionate words to end on. So thank you very much for joining us this morning, Dr. DuPaz. Best wishes to you in the future.
You are listening to the I Want to Speak to the Principal podcast with your host, Dr. Michael Milstead and William Jeffrey. It's where education is. So sit back, relax, and enjoy another episode of I want to speak to the principal.
Speak to Principal would like to welcome Dr. Kimberly McLeod to our show. Dr. McLeod, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Dr. McLeod.
Good morning, Dr. McLeod.
Good morning.
And thank you for joining us this morning. Dr. McLeod, before we begin our interview with you, we'd like you to give us just a little background about your experience in education.
Sure. I served in education for, believe it or not, a little over 25 years. I've worked as a pre-K teaching assistant, a school teacher, a school counselor, school administrator, university professor, executive director for academic affairs, and dean for a university system. And I'm a mom. Wow. I'm a mom of three boys in public school, 9th, 10th, and 11th. I'm an author. I've written about 14 books for public school systems and higher education communities and children's books.
Wow, Dr. McLeod, you have a wealth of experience in education. As I told you prior to us recording today, I know actually with your background, it would probably take an entire show for us to get through it.
I don't know if we could find any more qualified person.
Not at this point anyway.
Yeah.
And just want to thank you also, Dr. McLeod. You are the past president of an association that I'm affiliated with, and that's TAPSE. And we just had our conference maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago in San Antonio, and it was a huge success.
Oh my!
Yeah. You and your staff did a fantastic job. So we thank you very much.
Yeah, it was. You know, the benefit of pulling together so much intellectual capital and creating a plan for our community by our leaders is powerful.
That is exactly.
I want to state that I am also a member, Dr. Milstead. I remember you told me to join, and I did.
Absolutely.
You remember that?
I certainly did.
Yeah, I joined.
Yeah.
I just didn't go to the thing.
Yeah.
I wanted to be there.
Yeah.
But I couldn't.
It's not too late.
Yeah, absolutely.
We can get through all of this, and hopefully we can see you next year.
Oh, you're going to see me next year. Done deal.
No doubt. Dr. McLeod, as you are aware, COVID-19 is having a profound impact on K-12 students across America. According to ABC News Today, over 20,000 schools have closed as a result of the coronavirus. These closures are affecting over 15 million students. However, the scientists are consistent with their research that the virus is having little to no impact on young people. So we'd like to kind of get your thoughts on, you know, just based on that information, do you believe we need to continue with the school closures?
Yes, although children don't seem to get very sick from the infection, they're carriers of it. In China, where the best data was available, fewer infections were documented in children and teenagers and in older people, but they carry those symptoms and they pass it back, they take it home.
Right.
And it makes their parents, other adults that are in their community, very susceptible, including teachers and administrators and school leaders and paraprofessionals. In addition, children aren't the most mindful when it comes to hygiene, so it'll spread even faster. So right now, while there aren't any deaths documented to children, those that they have passed it to that are adults, it does have a very profound impact.
Okay. Yeah. You know, the other night I was out with my daughter and her husband and my little granddaughter, and we were out to dinner, my wife and I, and I have, you know, like most grandfathers, I want to hold my granddaughter. She's 2 years old, and she likes to play in my face. She likes to put her hand in my face quite a bit. And, you know, I was okay with that for quite before this big thing.
Right.
You know,
Pre-COVID.
Yeah. This big thing about the coronavirus started coming out. And actually, this is just last Monday. Then I started thinking, well, she goes to a preschool. And I was wondering, I was just hoping, I said, boy, I certainly hope that she did just kind of pick up something while she was in school. So I certainly concur with your point on that.
Texas, there are about approximately 2.5 million students who own free and reduced lunch. Many of these students rely on these meals for nourishment daily. If we close schools, how will these kids be able to eat?
Yeah, you know, it's amazing to see how the community is coming together. And Houston and Texas, you know, we've shown some moments of resiliency when Harvey hit us. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we've had some real disasters. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, your listeners and parents and community members, if they check their local school districts, many of them have set up areas where they can still receive food
right.
at no cost during this outbreak. So mm-hmm. those children who are particularly susceptible to impoverished food areas, that resource has been provided for all over the city. And I'm sure anyone who comes up and says they want a hot meal,
right.
they can go get as much as they would like. But the school districts have made those provisions for those families.
Okay, that's great information. Just to kind of follow up on that, Dr. McLeod, do you think that schools should provide some form of COVID-19 testing on staff and students when they do return to school?
Yeah, you know, just this morning at 8 o'clock, the U.S. House mm-hmm. passed a measure mm-hmm. to try and mitigate the spread of COVID-19 and the coronavirus,
right.
where they're including free testing as well as expanded food aid and expanded sick leave and benefits for workers.
Okay.
I don't know if schools are set up to do that type of testing, but I believe that if we create some partnerships and relationships with the healthcare field, we already do testing for hearing and for vision. And we, you know, when I was growing up, we even did lice checks. Right. And so I do believe it would be beneficial for us to be able to do testing, because we, if a child is a carrier and not exhibiting uh-huh. any symptoms, does not mean that they can't pass it to a loved one
right.
that may carry that virus. So if that were available and we could do that, I would absolutely support that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a way to protect not only the student and their family, but our community as a whole.
Okay.
That is a point that I did not think about, Dr. McLeod. I appreciate you sharing that with us. Since Governor Bill Abbott has declared the coronavirus as a state and emergency health issue in Texas, do you think that we should suspend high stakes testing this year?
Oh my goodness, yeah.
Yeah, I had to throw that one in.
Yeah.
You know, not to say that there is not value and relevance in knowing what our students, how we're preparing our students for college, career, and military readiness. But sometimes you just have to prioritize things in life. Right now, we want to protect our community as a whole, protect our health, protect our grandparents and parents from, you know, fighting this, you know, spreading this illness and helping survive it. To me, that needs to be the priority. And all of these, you know, with school closing, all of the employees that are hourly, that aren't salary, how do we protect them so they can still sustain and meet their, there's so many other priorities right now. I think testing, I mean, we can do it next year. The test isn't going anywhere.
That's right. That is right. Yeah. Well, if the NCAA can extend another year of eligibility on college athletes to play sports, I think that
another year.
We can get another year.
One more year.
Yeah, there you go. On testing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Dr. McLeod, yeah. just to kind of change gears for a little bit, you are currently in a runoff for District 6 for the Texas State Board of Education.
Yeah.
So, congratulations on that.
Congratulations.
Yay.
Yeah. So would you share with our listening audience, why do you want to become a member of the Texas State Board of Education?
Yes. One, you're right. I am in a runoff, and a win is so much better than a runoff. Yeah. So.
There you go. There you go.
Part of my work with the Texas Alliance of Black School Educators, I went to a conference once with NAFC,
mm-hmm.
and we were at the Monroe School in Kansas City, where the landmark case of Brown versus Board of Education, and we toured the school and looked at the Negro Baseball Hall of Fame. And one of the things that they said was there was a time when the community came together and they created the agenda that they wanted for their children in their area. And so I wanted to bring that same passion back to TAPC.
And I said, you know what? We have all of this intellectual capital. Shame on us if we don't come together and create an agenda that we need for our communities and our children and our school leaders. And so one of the things that we did was organize a Texas Education Policy Institute.
Okay.
My motto is, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And our children and our communities have been on the menu for far too long. And if we don't organize and be strategic, we will continue to be eaten alive. Part of why I wanted to run for the State Board of Education was to be able to have a seat at the table and make decisions that are in the best interest, not only for the district that I live in, which is District 6, but my vote will impact, if elected, the entire state of Texas. And why not put someone in office that is a true advocate, an advocate before this election, and will be an advocate after this election, to make the decisions that are in the best interest of our community? I built relationships with the Texas Association of Latino Administrators and Superintendents, that our group taxing, MASBA, the Mexican American School Board Association, the Texas Caucus of Black School Board Members. So it's not just me and my voice, it's a collective of all voices, and an understanding that if we want to do what is in the best interest of our children, we need to have a seat at the table.
I certainly concur. I mentioned earlier, I was at the TAPSE convention and I did see the Latino Association, I think, is that the name? They were present. Yeah, they were there. They were present when you delivered the state of TAP, all of our members. And they were there in record number at the conference. So that is great.
Yeah.
We really like that saying, man. If you are not at the table, then you're on the menu.
You barbecue chicken.
That is
so powerful.
That is very powerful. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
I really appreciate the inclusive manner that you are including everybody, and especially in our District 6. Believe it or not, I grew up in District 6. I appreciate the fact that you are such a well-rounded educator, because I think you'll get the holistic, not only from the K-12 and extended college view that you have, but you also understand what it is to bring in the culture and then not marginalize other cultures, bringing in those other cultures. You got my vote. I shouldn't say that on the air. I apologize. Yeah, but I appreciate someone who has a holistic perspective of education, especially when it regards to poverty for those people who are marginalized and don't have a voice. I think you'll be a really good person to speak to that in rooms where that representation is not met all the time.
Thank you. And, you know, let's say this, that, you know, poverty, the low socioeconomic status needs advocacy, but so do our students that are in special education.
Absolutely.
The lack of presence of students that are in gifted and talented, and to be able to make sure that every child gets what they need. If they're at our table, they need to be fed. Period. Regardless of language, regardless of income, who their parents are, who they're living with, all of our children deserve to be fed. And we know that children and that live in low socioeconomic areas, they're just as brilliant as anyone else. We just got to give them the opportunity. And you probably, Mr. Jeffries and Dr. Milstead, like my family, they grew up very poor. But, you know, my parents went to college and they supported me. The work they did opened up doors to generations like me. The work that I plan to do will help generations that have not even been born yet. It's not only about us right now. It's about the future that we're trying to create and protect.
I agree. And you've heard it right here, listeners. That's Dr. Kimberly McLeod. She is in a runoff, will be held on May 26th, if I'm not mistaken, Dr. McLeod. And her school districts in District 6 include Aldean, A-Leaf, Cy-Fair ISD, Houston, Katy ISD, Klein ISD, Spring Branch, Spring, Tomball, and Waller. I think I got them all correct there, Dr. McLeod.
There you go.
One of the things we try to do is we definitely try to do our research, particularly when we have outstanding guests like yourself coming on our show. That, Dr. McLeod, can you give our listeners, if they want to contact you, can you give them any Facebook or Twitter address and those type of things?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My handle to reach me on Twitter and Facebook is Dr. Kim for Texas, BRKIM, the number 4TX. And then my website is www.drkim4texas.com/TX. I'd appreciate your support and thank you all for your broadcast and trying to keep our public informed and protected. An ounce of prevention beats a pound of cure. Thank you.
There you go. Thank you, Dr. McLeod, and best of luck in your runoff. And you have my vote also, by the way. And my family.
Thank you,
Dr. McLeod.
On our next episode of I Want to Speak to the Principal, with your hosts, Dr. Michael Milstead and William Jeffrey, we will look at the resources that are being shared online. What are the best practices for blended learning? How can students be engaged online? What challenges do we face as a world as we deal with our new normal, COVID-19? These questions and many more will be answered on our next episode of I Want to Speak to the Principal.
Tweet, chat with us on Twitter.
Be sure to share the podcast on your favorite social media channels.
Want to see some more of us? Head over and meet us on Instagram